Welcome to the LDN Radio Show, brought to you by the LDN Research Trust. I'm your host, Linda Elsiegood. I have an exciting lineup of guest speakers who are LDN experts in their field. We will be discussing low-dose naltrexone and its many uses in autoimmune diseases, cancers, etc. Thank you for joining us. Today I'd like to welcome our guest, Anno, from the United States, who has MCAS, EDS, POTS and SIBO. Thank you for joining us today, Anno.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
So when did your journey start?
That's a good question. I can look back now that I know what I know, and I see things all the way back to early childhood, right? But at the time, you don't think twice about it, you know, until all the pieces of the puzzle come together later, and then suddenly everything makes sense. I began to have really bad digestive issues when, after the birth of my son in 2016, probably a little bit before then too, but after that pregnancy, just really, really, really struggled with GI issues and couldn't figure out what was going wrong. Bloating, constipation. Now that I know what I know, all the classic indicators of methane dominant SIBO. And so I was diagnosed with SIBO shortly after that pregnancy and did the treatment and then relapsed. And then I did the treatment again and then I relapsed and I did the treatment again and then I relapsed, which I'm sure is a familiar story to a lot of people. So then you start looking at the underlying causes and what's going on and, you know, what's kind of causing this. And we danced around with lots of different possibilities and trying to figure things out and never really knew what it was. And I remember looking at this pie chart of like all the underlying causes and the very teeny tiny little smallest sliver of them all was Ehlers-Danlos. And actually even remember talking to a practitioner about it, like, do I have that? What is that? And it kind of got written off as zebras often do because it can be kind of hard and tricky to diagnose. I ended up moving across the country, got in with a GI specialist in St. Louis, and in the first appointment went through so many different things. It's like, you have EDS and that is the underlying cause. And that is why you keep relapsing with SIBO. Through that, he also suspected I had POTS, referred me to a neurologist for a tilt table test for the official diagnosis, put the MCAS puzzle in there as well. And really that was the turning point of my story to understand things that had happened when I was a little kid, but especially the struggles that I had had for those past few years.
So as a child, you know, what symptoms were you getting? Can you remember?
Constipation probably was like the biggest red flag that I look back and I think that's not really normal. You know, a kid shouldn't struggle in that way. Maintaining body temperature is actually an interesting one, a part of the autonomic function in that POTS side of it. As a kid in the summer, I would struggle to play outside and it's hot and it's humid in the Midwest where I live, but I would wear a sweatshirt in July outside. And you look back and you're like, that's probably not normal, you know? But at the time I just wrote it off, oh, I'm cold natured, you know, or what have you. Here's a funny one. When I was pretty young, I had 4 extra teeth removed. There just wasn't enough room in my mouth, which come to find out later is part of the diagnostic criteria for EDS. Didn't know it at the time, but I remember my doctor at the time saying, or the dentist, the oral surgeon saying, that when they put me under, that I counted back further than anyone had ever counted back. Like, you know, most people make it 99, 98, 97, and they're out. Like, I made it to 87 or, you know, whatever number. And at the time, I was just like, oh, he's yanking my chain. He's just trying to make this little kid feel good. But actually, a delayed onset to anesthesia is a part of EDS. And I found that out later when I had an epidural with my son, and it took an hour, and I could still feel everything. But I look back on that now and I think, oh, I probably did count pretty far back, more so than most, you know.
I mean, were rashes as a child a problem and headaches?
So that's interesting. I actually don't struggle with that side of EDS or of MCAS very much. I would say not more so out of the norm. Currently, my shins itch, which is a really odd symptom, but I don't get rashes and I don't get hives that go along with it. They don't get splotchy, they just itch.
So we can have an understanding before you had your diagnosis. What would a typical day have been like for you from when you got up to when you went to bed?
Great question. Mornings are always my worst time of day. So I'd wake up and I would feel pretty miserable and like not like I would want to get out of bed, especially when I was really sick. The energy level and just knowing that once I switched my body from being horizontal to vertical, it was going to have to work much harder to maintain my heart rate and blood pressure and all of these things, and that's taxing on my body. Showering in the morning is generally not an option, especially before, because I would feel so worn out and so miserable to do something as simple as take a shower in the morning, which most people can start their day doing. Really, the GI issues were the worst, though. Once I start eating, my stomach would kill me. It would hurt. I'd feel things. I'd feel bloated. That distension would just wreck my day. Being afraid of eating was, as time went on, you follow this diet and that diet, and you cut this and you cut that. And then all of a sudden, you're standing in Costco and you feel like you can't eat a single item in the whole store. And I remember sobbing my eyes out one day because every single thing I could look at and I could make an argument, you should eat it because it's good for this, or it has that in it, and that's good for this. And then on the flip side, I shouldn't eat it because it has that, and that's bad for this. And so, before I was diagnosed, before I started really figuring out how to take care of and manage these symptoms, those were my days.
And what sort of time did you go to bed and did you sleep soundly?
Yeah, I've generally always slept pretty well. I'm a night owl, so I love to stay up, and but I would end my days feeling bloated and feeling like my pants don't fit, or truly they wouldn't fit. Jeans that I would put on in the morning and have plenty of room in, after dinner, I would have to take them off and switch to something more comfortable because the visible distension was just too much for a zipper and a button.
So it was 2016 when all these symptoms were problematic. And what year was it that you found the team to help you?
Yeah, that was 2018. I'm pretty relentless in my pursuit of knowledge and figuring things out. And so I just kept searching and searching and searching and digging and digging. And I felt like very fortunate that I got there as fast as I could, and that my symptoms throughout childhood were not as bad as they could have been. I do remember going to my pediatrician in high school and in college and saying, everything goes black and I can't see, and I didn't pass out. I never once hit the floor, but I'd get to the top of the steps and like, I better hold that railing because if I don't, I'm afraid I will. And he said, drink more Gatorade, right? Which, okay, has sodium, it'll definitely make you feel better. But there was a lot of things that were going on that no one knew, but they weren't that bad until 2016 and that pregnancy. And then they got bad. And that was when I was like, I've got to change this because I felt like I lost my whole life,
So in that 2 years from 2016 to 2018, how many doctors do you think you consulted with?
Oh gosh. Probably 100 different appointments, with
Really?
different people and nutritionists and yeah, various other things.
Did any of them dismiss you as that it was psychological, or were you believed by all of them?
I was very fortunate to have to work at the time. I lived in Colorado and they're pretty forward in their functional medicine. So I was very fortunate to work with practitioners who didn't write me off. I would say a little bit, maybe if I think back to high school and college and my pediatrician, and it was POTS. I can see that now. I wouldn't say he wrote me off. He definitely wouldn't have said it was psychological, but he was at the extent of his knowledge on how to help me. And I feel like that is actually the challenge that I ran up to more, was that I was working with practitioners who were giving me all they had, but I was at the end of their area of expertise.
Okay. So when you found your team in St. Louis, what was the plan once you got the diagnosis?
Yeah, good question. Man, it's hard to remember some of that because it feels like so long ago. But we began with treating the SIBO and finding the right prokinetic to go along with that. And that is the point in which LDN joined my regimen and my life. And we worked for about 2 years on just getting better and maintaining better. Treated the MCAS at the same time, which was something I hadn't previously treated, and with the goal of getting pregnant with my second child. So happy to say that happened in 2020. That's how I spent my pandemic year. And really, my journey has been very uphill since then.
So what is a typical day like for you now?
Yeah, great question. There's this functional range scale that gives percentages and these like explanations on what you can and can't do in a day. And I use that all the time. My good days are really good days. Like I'm in the 70 to 80%, probably most of the time. I am able to work a full-time job. I will say it's flexible. I work from home. On a bad day, I work from bed. I do. It's I'm very fortunate in that way. But I'm able to work hard, which is someone who loves what they do, is great to be able to have a career like that. I'm a single mom. I have two kids that are 4 and 7. So my days are busy with them and giving them the time and energy that I have. But I'm able to do so because my health is at such a good spot right now.
Well,
And
that's
then I will
nice.
say there are bad days, right? Like there are days where, if I get sick, I know that an illness will definitely take me down, and I'm back to that 20-30% range on the functional scale. And it's a task to get food on a plate and eat food for a day, and that's all the energy that I have to give. Thankfully, I've as I'm learning these things, I'm learning how to get back to those good days. But majority of them are good days rather than the inverse, which used to be that most of my days were bad days.
What would you say to other people that are following you, who I should say, following in your footsteps? They haven't yet got the diagnosis. What should they do?
Yeah, don't give up. That's my biggest advice. Be relentless in your pursuit of something's wrong. I know this is not right. This is not how it's supposed to be. And that's okay. Our bodies are the way that they are, but don't give up. And if you're working with a practitioner who is not getting you the answers, find the next one. And that's not, you can work with the best doctor in the world, but if they're not an expert in you and your body and you're at their limit, then it's not a good fit. You should not be their patient. There are the doctors out there, and finding them is worth the drive, it's worth the time. It's a sacrifice, right? I live 3 hours away from these doctors now, but I will drive over in a heartbeat because it truly gave me my life back.
Well, that's amazing. Oh, is there anything else you would like to add?
Oh, I don't know. Just don't give up. Which I realize is easier said than done whenever you are in the thick of it. I've been there, and it's miserable, and the tears come, and you feel like there is no hope. But when you find it, it's worth it.
Well, thank you very much for sharing your experience with us today.
Sure thing.
I'm Dr. Leonard Weinstock, a guy who's been prescribing LDN since 2005, and I've seen the wonders, and I keep on seeing them, especially in hard-to-diagnose conditions. They're not that hard to do, but once you know about mast cell activation syndrome, postural orthostatic tachycardia syndrome, and Ehlers-Danlos syndrome, you'll find that 17% of your friends or relatives have one or more of these conditions, and you can help them. We're making a documentary to wake up the medical community, to educate the population, but we need funding. So please fund whatever you can afford, no matter how little, www.mcasfund.com. That's mcasfund.com.
Any questions or comments you may have, please email me, Linda, L-I-N-D-A, at ldnrt.org. I look forward to hearing from you. Thank you for joining us today. We really appreciated your company. Until next time, stay safe and keep well.